Hi, this is Alina and Megan, and you're listening to Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, where we dive into all things health, wellness, and fitness.
We are two certified athletic trainers, personal trainers, and nutrition coaches who met and graduated together from the University of Arkansas. And we want to do this podcast to spread our joy about treating our bodies well through nutrition, exercise, and knowledge. Today on the podcast, we welcome guest Emily Kadish. Emily is a physical therapist specializing in women's pelvic health and wellness. She obtained both her bachelor's in science and exercise science and her doctorate from Marshall University and has continued her education with the Postural Restoration Institute, Herman and Wallace Pelvic Rehab Institute, American Physical Therapy Association Women's Health, postpartum corrective exercise specialist, and is an Empowered Performance grad. We were actually in the same cohort, and I must say I learned a ton from Emily. Her passion for pelvic health stems from her own difficult journey through pregnancy, birth, and beyond. Her mission is to bring greater awareness to the issues that women face and encourage women to become comfortable with the uncomfortable with all things pertaining to pelvic health. She strives to bring hope, confidence, and empowerment to women navigating their journey in pelvic health and wellness. She is the owner of Empower Her Physical Therapy and Wellness, which is a mobile and virtual therapy practice out of Fort Myers, Florida. We are beyond excited to have Emily on the podcast. Welcome.
Welcome to the podcast, Emily. We're so excited to have you on.
Thank you, guys. I'm so thankful for this opportunity to chat with you all. You guys are awesome because I envy you and, you know, having met you guys through Empower Performance, and I see you guys killing it in the gym, and I'm like, oh, I wish I could go back to those days. But as a busy mom, I'll just watch from afar and one day I'll get there. But you guys are awesome. So thank you guys for having me.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah. Some days we don't always kill it in the gym. But
tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, who are you? Where'd you come from? How'd you get where you are?
Yeah, so I am a physical therapist. I've been practicing, I guess I graduated in May of 2015. I mean, shortly after I had my son, you know, had no intention of going into pelvic floor physical therapy. In fact, we had like one lecture in my program on it, I believe. And so, yeah, and then I had my son and I realized, wow, like, you know, our bodies go through a lot, especially our pelvic floor. And so that was my first inclination that I wanted to go towards. In the beginning, it was just like pregnancy and postpartum. I was like, oh, you know, I don't know about like pelvic floor and internal exams and stuff. And so I was working in an outpatient orthopedic clinic, just kind of your standard. We saw a lot of athletes. We saw the, like, you know, weekend warrior types, and it was actually a hip clinic. Well, I shouldn't say hip clinic, but we saw a lot of hip pathology, a lot of labrum repairs, hip impingement, capsular stuff. And I actually got the opportunity to go out to Vail and see some surgeries from Dr. Philippon. He does a lot of labrum repairs and work with, you know, high level athletes and stuff. And so when I was out there, I met a lady who had just had a surgery, and she was saying how she had, you know, one of her main symptoms was like vulvodynia type stuff and pelvic floor pain. And I was like, really? Like, and I just had never really put those two associations together, although I had started kind of wanting to get into pregnancy stuff, and I just wasn't in that deep yet. This is pretty new.
She had had a hip surgery?
She had some sort of, yeah, like a labrum repair. They saw a lot of that. So we went out there and we saw the surgeries, but then we also got to see the rehab. And I say we, it was me and a colleague. We went out there together and we got to see the rehab of these labrum repairs. And we worked with their PT department and shadowed them and whatever for a few days. So it's a cool experience, but it just, like, that one person just stuck out to me. And I was like, really? Like, you know, labrum stuff, and she's having these really, you know, severe symptoms, like vaginal symptoms, vaginal pain and vulvar stuff. And so that was the first inclination to me, is like, wow, like this connection is deep, right? And so I went back and continued to practice there. And I just started noticing more and more as I was taking some pregnancy and postpartum classes that the, you know, the hip stuff that I was seeing in clinic and some symptoms of the females that I was seeing. So, you know, say for instance, like, you know, a hip pain and, you know, somebody wasn't getting better and it would be like an obturator. And at that time I didn't connect all these things. but it would be pain around the ischial tuberosities, but it wasn't quite the hamstring. And it was like, well, what is it? And now I know, you know, it was so connected to the pelvic floor. Yes, 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 me too. So it was so connected to the pelvic floor. And, you know, we'd also see, I would have patients with complaints of pain with sex. You know, they couldn't do the deep flexion, external rotation position required of intercourse. And, you know, they were in there, they were having their hips scanned and they were having pathology in their hips. And so I really started to make those connections with that. And so I still hadn't done any internal stuff at that point. I was also seeing a pelvic floor therapist for some of my own postpartum stuff, which when I look back now, it goes into a lot of the stuff I've learned from PRI and Empower Performance and imbalances in the pelvis and how those connections, you know, matched up with some of the tightness I felt and then the weaknesses I felt and, you know, the patterns of the body. But so, yeah, I just kind of kept going into all of that and eventually took my Herman and Wallace, done the first class with pelvic floor internal work. And then I had another baby and I took a year and a half off. And then I just recently, in October, opened my own mobile and virtual women's pelvic health clinic, I guess, practice in South Florida. So that's kind of where I'm at now. And oh yeah, and then of course, Empower Performance, which we have all done over the summer, which really, oh, I should mention too, is I had a really hard time after my daughter, which leads me into like where PRI comes in for me. I had a really hard time after I had my daughter. And I had a very traumatic birth, which plays into all the pelvic floor stuff, as we know. And I was seeing a couple different pelvic floor, I had seen a couple different pelvic floor therapists doing internal work on myself. And all the things that I thought were supposed to be helping me, they just weren't. And so it was about a year in, I was about a year postpartum. And my husband, who was a strength coach, he was like, you know, like, you sound like you're in a left AIC pattern. And I was like, what's a left AIC pattern? Like, I had never heard of PRI before. And he's like, yeah, you know, he had shown me a few things that he had. And because he had worked with some PRI stuff before through people he works with. And Eric Cressy, I'm sure you guys have heard his name before. He trained with him and has worked with him, you know. So I think that's where initially some connections were made with the PRI. So anyways, he said that to me and, you know, he showed me a few things and I was like, really? Like, and it was just like everything that I was feeling in my body. So it was like all these connections that I just started making. I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, the asymmetries in the pelvis and the pelvic floor and left to right go into like the obturator and internus and just, you know, all the quadrants of the pelvic floor. And so that's when I started making the connections with PRI. And then I was kind of like hooked. So I kind of like went down that rabbit hole and started to try to pick up the pieces and fix myself that way. I kind of like quit doing internal pelvic floor therapy on myself because it was just getting to be a lot. Like it had been a year and I really wasn't, I was getting better, yes, but I was not anywhere where, you know, I couldn't go on a walk for more than 10 minutes or the store. It's just like everything, daily activities are very hard for me. And so I found PRI and that's when things started to change for me and started to make the connections of the breathing and the, you know, it's not like I didn't know about breathing before, but just the in-depth and all the things that are PRI. And so then I found Empower Performance. And so, yeah, all those connections just kind of came full circle for me. And then that's when I really started to heal. And so all the rabbit holes that came of that. But so, yeah, that's kind of my story of how I am where I am. And yeah. So,
yeah, it's crazy how things just serendipitously kind of one after the other. Like I'm sure finding EP after you had kind of discovered PRI and like started to realize like that it applied to you and everybody really, it just kind of really, I mean, honestly, I've only known you since EP, but it seems like you've grown so much as a clinician, just like through all those connections, which is just amazing. I had a question because you said that obviously after kids, Alina and I obviously do not have children. But I was wondering, what do you wish that you knew before you had kids? Because you seem to have gotten more interested in pelvic floor post children because of your experience. But what do you wish that you would have known?
Oh, everything. such a bad answer, but really I just felt like I didn't know anything about the pelvic floor, and that's what I always say. It's like, even as a physical therapist, like I was a graduated physical therapist already, and I didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about that part of my body. It was just like unknown territory. I wish someone would have told me like how I could prepare the pelvis and the pelvic floor for birth, and you know, specifically how to keep strong, and then, you know, also balance like what everything that we need to do as far as, you know, keep the pelvis mobile, but also keeping it, you know, strong, and, you know, just down to even different like laboring positions and what we do up into the coming weeks to prepare for birth and afterwards the healing, and how, you know, I had this preconceived notion that I was going to go in, get an epidural. I wasn't going to feel anything but pressure. This baby was going to come out and we were all going to go home and it was going to be fine. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, right? Like, you know, some of us are very sore in the perineum for a few weeks, and, you know, depending on your degree of tear, you know, how uncomfortable it can be just to sit even for a few weeks. Like, those are just things that took me off guard. Like, I just had no idea. And so just even getting over those initial acute phases of healing and postpartum, and then everything that goes in after that, you know.
With a newborn, like forget the whole body situation. Right. You also have a newborn. So
right. That's, and hormones and, oh, yeah. You know, it's just like a, you know,
whirlwind.
Dumpster fire sometimes. Yeah. And just that it's not glamorous. It's hard. It's really hard. It's a blessing, but it's also very, very, very hard and very different for every single person. But yeah, I wish I just would have known all of that. I wish I would have known definitely about the breathing aspect and keeping the diaphragm functioning properly, and try to negate those patterns that we now know as much as possible during pregnancy, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that is a key for a lot of people is, you know, we're going to get into an extension pattern. Like, there's no denying that, you know, our diaphragm's going to, you know, take a hit to some degree. But if we know, you know, how to reverse that to even the smallest degree, I feel like our outcomes after are going to be much better. So,
yeah, so I mean, it's like any surgery. Like, if you're going to go and have like ACL repair, you'd want to like prehab to strengthen the muscles before you go and like lose them, right? If they're not there in the first place, how are you supposed to like regain them?
Exactly. I was just going to say, so yes, why are we as a society like not treating pregnancy and postpartum like that, right?
Yeah, why that's aren't we getting a good question.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like, and I say this sometimes, you know, as clinicians and trainers, we are aware of this. We are aware of our bodies. Like, we, almost to me, it's like, I see somebody on the, you know, mom on the street, and I'm like, you know, she has to know something about the pelvic floor. But in reality, there's so many people that still just don't have a clue, right? And then so sometimes we are so surrounded by it, we almost think it's second nature, but it's really not to the person, you know. General population person. So
yeah, it's a hard place to talk about too.
Yeah, that's another huge thing, is being comfortable talking about it, and which is a barrier too. But
so you took the Herman and Wallace, which is like one of the more gold standards, I'm guessing, for pelvic floor PT. I've heard about it before.
I was told it was of pelvic floor PT.
That's pretty cool.
And then there's other ones that are more like the Chevy. That was the quote that I had from a pelvic floor physical therapist.
So I'm kind of interested in how you've used that certification plus PRI and what the differences are.
Well, so yes, I did choose Herman and Wallace. There's the APTA has some, and there's some other companies, but yes, I heard great things about Herman and Wallace. So that's why I went with them, and they have the availability of where their locations are and stuff, just, you know, meshed with my schedule. So that's where I started there. Just two very different things, right? So I think, you know, Herman and Wallace, they, especially the first class, they teach you palpation, you know, each of the muscle layers, how to palpate them. They talk a little bit about prolapse and your common, you know, standard incontinence and things like that. You know, so they don't really touch on any of the breathing or the asymmetries of the pelvis or So it's more of that's just the class in itself. It's just more of just getting to know the pelvic floor and how to assess that and treat. And then PRI, you know, obviously they go into depth of the functions, especially the pelvis restoration class. You know, they go into the functions of all the quadrants and what's happening with a left AIC, what's happening with a PEC, what's happening with a patho PEC. And so that gives you more information as to why, when you're palpating, which is the skills I learned in the Herman and Wallace class, why when you're palpating certain muscles of the pelvis, why they might be, you know, they might have increased tone, or why you might be weaker on one side, stronger on the other, or why you might see more symptoms on one side versus the other. So that's how they kind of mesh together. I hope I answered that one.
Yeah, that was great. That was really great, because I don't really have much of a background in pelvic floor like health, but I know some information from things I've learned from people I've talked to, but I do understand more PRI. And I think meshing the two is giving people the best outcome. So, I mean, that's my opinion. And I think understanding asymmetries on anything is going to give somebody the best outcome, with whether it's strength training or pelvic floor PT. But I was just kind of interested in, for someone who's taken both, like what you felt. So that was really great.
Yeah, I do feel like, for me, you know, I do feel like the PRI was a missing link, not only personally, but even now that I'm seeing clients again, since diving into all this stuff, you know, I'm seeing sort of those patterns, and I'm understanding why I'm going to be, you know, people have more symptoms on the right side.
Yeah.
Not always, but how they're, you know, might be a little bit tighter, so to speak, or increased tone in the right anterior pelvic outlet and the right adductor versus the left side might be a little bit more weaker, so to speak. And so really just putting all those together is just like, I really feel like it was the missing link. And you know, I know, especially from personal experience, and just goes a long way to just to understanding that and being able to show that to a client while your pelvis is in this position. So this is why this side of the pelvic floor feels a little bit worse than the other, or whatever the symptoms may be. Or this is why we need to work on inhibiting some muscles on this side and facilitating some muscles on this side to get you some balance. But in the end, that's going to help strengthen the pelvic floor. So we may not be directly working with the pelvic floor, but we are.
Right.
So
Yeah, cool. So you were talking a little bit about the obturator internus and how that can be kind of like get that like deep internal ischial tuberosity pain that's not quite like hamstring insertion. What are some causes of that? Because I've been having some of that, and I know that you had said that you had as well. Is yours on the right, by the way, Emily?
Mine's mostly the right, but even the left sometimes too.
So what can be some like causes of that? And then like, what are some common referral patterns? Because obviously there's different ways that you can kind of suffer from that, I guess.
Yeah. So the obturator can be tricky. I think it is so tricky because of the connections to the hip and the pelvis. So, you know, in an asymmetrical pattern, and I could be saying this completely wrong, but, or say you have like a PEC when your iliums are forward and your hips are in external rotation, right? So you could see either. You could have tenderness on that obturator because it's long and strained, but it's trying to hold on, so it has increased tone, or it could be short and tight. I think most of the time it's probably going to be longer on the left, but it can still be tender and painful because it has increased tone, right? So just because it's long doesn't mean it's not tight. Mm-hmm. So common referral patterns is ischial tuberosity. Like I said, I was seeing with my hip patients, and it was like that it wasn't, you know, you might automatically think ischial tuberosity, proximal hamstring, which obviously they're so close in nature that it could be one or the other. But, you know, I would be treating the hamstring and they're like, no, it's not. It's like not quite it when I would palpate it. And now I know, okay, it probably was the obturator internus that needed released. Or the hip needed to be in a better position so that it could fire. It wasn't fighting to fire, which can also irritate a muscle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And I think, you know, so you have that connection with all the nerves that come through the obturator foramen. And so that can cause referral pain down the inner thigh. Like I said, we've already talked about ischial tuberosity pain. It could, you know, cause a feeling of heaviness in the rectum if that nerve is kind of irritated. If it's tight, if the obturator is tight, it's going to lift up on the pelvic floor. And so it could cause that whole side of the pelvic floor to kind of be elevated a little bit more and kind of pull it up. So you could have even referral pain on one side of the perineum, like burning, itching, any type of nerve symptoms when it kind of gets irritated. So I think I covered several.
Yeah, I've noticed with myself, like, and again, I haven't like officially been diagnosed, but I'm pretty sure that it's my right like obturator, like on the proximal attachment, like on my pelvis. And it seems like it sometimes get pissed off, and it never used to until a couple months ago, if I'm doing like jumping or like bilateral jumping specifically is what it seems like a broad jump, like repeated broad jumps. And it doesn't seem, it's not every time, but it seems like it's kind of relatively common as of lately. And so I was just curious, like, is it usually like that medial portion that is more irritated and not the actual attachment to the femur? Or because do you ever see people with symptoms on their femur? Yeah.
It's more of, especially on the right side, if we're stuck on the right side and that adductor is holding on too, because there's so much fascial connection to the obturator and the adductor on that side, it is sort of the medial border. I'm probably not saying my anatomical terms quite right, but yes, more like if you were to palpate internally, it would be more anterior on the, like if you think of the obturator foramen, be more anterior on that obturator foramen versus more, I guess, distal.
Yeah, it gets confusing in the pelvis.
Just so people understand, the pelvis is probably, it's very confusing. One of the more confusing aspects. So, and also more, it's like, what position are you looking at it from? It's not just, oh, here's your pelvis. Like, which way are you looking at it from? What's moving on what? Like, there's just, it's complicated. So yeah, explaining this is really hard.
That's why I'm like looking like, where's my pelvis at? But then I'm like,
I know it doesn't even matter because we're just going to be your audio, but okay.
Yeah, well, they can see more on your Instagram because you put up the most amazing reels. Yeah, they're so good. Oh. I don't know how you do that. I've never done a reel.
Yeah, reels are hard. I've done like three. Yes. It's too stressful doing them. Anyway.
Yours are amazing and they're funny, but you are getting like great points across. So
yeah.
Well, thanks. They take a lot of work. Sometimes more than they should, right?
I agree completely.
30 minutes later, I'm like, really? Like, I just spent 30 minutes making a reel, but it's fun.
It's worth it. It's an investment into your practice.
Yeah, that's right.
So your husband, where is he a strength coach? In Iowa? No, somewhere in the Midwest.
No, he works for the Minnesota Twins.
Okay. Oh. Okay. That's why you live in Florida or?
How's that working? Yeah, we live here in Fort Myers because that's where the spring training complexes. And so off season, he works down here if players want, because there's some players that, you know, live where the off season training campuses are. Mm-hmm. And that's either Florida or Arizona. And so he does have some players that come in and train throughout the off season here. And then he also works here at the complex. He has an office. And so, yeah, that's why we're in Florida. And then some of the year we go up to Minnesota during the season. And so that's why we're kind of back and forth some.
Are you originally from Florida?
No, I am originally from Southern Ohio / West Virginia. So it's like a tri-state area where Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia meet. And I technically grew up in Ohio, but you could literally cross a bridge to West Virginia. And so that's where the accent comes from.
Okay.
Okay.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
So he's a strength coach. And so he's the one who kind of introduced you into PRI, which is super interesting because I feel like not that many strength coaches do PRI, but is he using that with his athletes? And do you guys learn off each other? Like, do you talk about this stuff at home?
We do. Yeah. And so, yeah, he was the one that introduced me and yeah, I think they use it to some degree with the players and the team. I think he probably picked it up some with, like I said, working with Eric Cressy because he used to train with him and work with him. And so, yeah, just being in baseball kind of picked that up, which is pretty cool. And so, yeah, we're always like kind of bouncing ideas off of each other, which is funny. It's funny, I always say like he has a strength coach brain and then I have my PT brain over here, which is nice because, you know, we do need to learn how to like mend these, you know, disciplines bridge that gap. And so it's just funny to, our points of view sometimes are like different, but also the same. And so learning those different perspectives. So
that's awesome. Sounds like a dream team to me.
yeah, sort of.
That's awesome. I love it.
So let's talk a little bit about your practice. What is it called and how's it going? What made you decide to open up your own practice?
So my practice is Empower Her Physical Therapy and Wellness. It's solely focused on women's health. And I had always wanted to, I never really wanted to be a business owner, but I just felt like for the past 2 years, I just had all this information that I was just like dying to like get out, you know, like when I started posting some stuff about pregnancy and postpartum, I would have people kind of reach out to me and ask me questions. But then at the end of the day, it's like, I had no way to like see them myself, whether that was virtually or in person. And so, you know, just this past year, so this has been in the making for about two. And then I went through my own personal experiences and it just was kind of coming to full circle. And it was just like even boiling in me even more. Like this information needs to get out. And then also, you know, I wanted to have an outlet and something to call my own because I wasn't working. But then also didn't want to go back to working in a traditional physical therapy clinic because that's a whole nother story. And so I was just like, this is the perfect time as ever to just start it up and see where it goes. And so that's where I'm at now. And I see clients here in Fort Myers. And then I've also had several virtual clients not from Florida, from all over the country. And so, like I said, I'm mobile. So I go to clients' houses, I take everything with me and treatment table, all the supplies. And it's worked out nicely because like my niche obviously is women's health, but I get a lot of pregnancy and postpartum. So we have young kids and they can't get out. So it's worked out nice. And yeah.
Cool. So virtual, how does that work? Like, how does it work with like licensure and like, how are you practicing with that? Like if you wanted to treat someone for example, in Washington State or something, I don't really know the...
Yeah. I mean, technically for it to be physical therapy, you know, there's a lot of gray areas in this. And especially with COVID, I think a lot of people have been trying to kind of figure this out. But you can definitely, from a wellness standpoint, consult with people outside of your state. You know, as far as it continuing to be ongoing, you have to do what's best for the client. You know, if they're needing, you know, manual work or, you know, you aren't best suited to treat them in person. Then obviously helping them find alternative routes, but mostly I just consult a session or two and then, you know, make other suggestions for them.
Cool. That's awesome.
So yeah, hopefully the licensure will, you know, I know there's a compact in the works, meaning, you know, hopefully the licensure will be like more national, I guess. And so I know that that's in the works, but Florida isn't one of the states on there yet. So yeah, I think we have a ways to go, but hopefully we'll get there.
So is an MD, are they able to practice like wherever? Because I know NDs are not, but okay.
MDs still and DOs still have to have like state licensures, kind of like how we do for athletic training.
Yeah. So like how does certain doctors that you used to work with, how was she seeing clients from all over the place?
And this is why I know this. She has licensures
everywhere. Okay.
You can get different licensures in different states. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. So yeah, you can get licensed in other states, which is something I've considered with the Minnesota thing. But yeah, it can be a barrier for sure.
It's so interesting because personal training doesn't have that. And as I'm an athletic trainer, but I mainly function under my personal training for these reasons that it's much easier. I can go and train somebody wherever because there's almost no body of, I don't know, higher body telling me what to do. Whereas like if I work as an athletic trainer, I'd have to get certified in different states. So it's just very interesting that, you know, I think sometimes you have more leeway as a personal trainer, which is crazy but it kind of is that way.
Yeah, and I've seen some therapists in this predicament who might have like a personal trainer certification, or what do they call it, like a wellness coaching certification or whatever. But yeah, I've also heard that, you know, if something were to happen, it falls under your highest credential. Mm-hmm. And so there is just a lot of gray area into it. But, you know, like I said, wellness consults, I kind of see it as like, are they reaching out to me to, you know, say it's like diastasis and they just want some general guidelines and they aren't actually undergoing a plan. They aren't actually being referred by a physician. They aren't actually under a plan of care with a physician or anyone else. Then
different.
I can consult with them as a wellness provider and say, you know, here's some general, like some core stuff and some breathing and, you know, so stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. Cool. So you obviously started working in like an outpatient setting, right? Right out of school?
Right.
So if you could do it over again, would you have done what you're doing now right out of the gate, or do you not feel like you would have been ready?
Personally, my personality, I don't think I would have. I needed the mentors that I had. I needed the experiences that I had to be where I am right now. I know some people have those personalities where they're just like ready to go and, you know, whatever, but that wasn't for me. I wanted that guidance. I had several very good mentors, and so I am thankful for that. So yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. What advice would you have for somebody that maybe is a PT right now that has ideas about going into pelvic floor?
Or not even a PT yet.
Well, no, this question is really for everybody.
What advice? I would say, it's probably a very basic answer, but try to find somebody who is your ideal, where you see yourself, and see if you can get into one of your rotations with them, because I didn't have that opportunity. And of course, I didn't know I wanted to go into pelvic floor, but if you know that's what you want to do, like, try to find that person to mentor you, because then they'll be your mentor, you know, forever if you make good connections with them. And so I think that is really key, is just even if in school. And then probably even the same as a new grad, if you can find somewhere to work, that's your ideal place. I know some people just kind of find the place that's maybe offering the most money or the most benefits or whatever, and that's completely fine. It's dependent on your life situation. But I would just say weigh those pros and cons. If this is something that you really want to see, if you want to have a business one day and that person's really great at business, or if that person's really great at pelvic floor and business, it'd be like, bingo, even if the offer was maybe better in the other place. And so I think those experiences go a long way. So
do you have a business coach?
Gosh, that's what I'm looking for now. No, I don't. Like, I built my website and I just kind of like building my Instagram on my own. And there's definitely some things that I need to do to kind of transition my business to where I want it to be and to fit my lifestyle. And I think there's so many possibilities now, especially with COVID and how we've all transitioned to virtual. I just have a lot of ideas. It's just not sure how to get there yet. So I've actually reached out to several people this week as far as like business coaching too. Oh, so cool. We'll see where that goes. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Well, we've both witnessed you grow a ton just in like the last several months, as far as like just putting out really, really, really valuable information, no matter if you're a clinician or like just a person who, you know, has a pelvic floor, which is everyone. So thank you for all of your info.
Yeah, thank you for the education, because you've put out some really great stuff. And for people that are listening who are interested, or just in general, just go check out her Instagram, because there's such good stuff out there. You've done some lectures for Katie's program and very valuable. So we do have one more question. Well, two, actually.
Oh, boy.
The first one is, what do you do every day? It doesn't really have to be every day, but some days, to move your brain or move your body.
Okay, so that's pretty easy.
Yeah.
I always do some sort of breathing, some form of the PRI stuff that fits my body. You know, it varies from day to day, depending on what position I feel like I'm in. Gosh, I feel like a whole nother rabbit hole. But, you know, what position I feel like I'm in, what needs some work that day. So, yeah, always some form of breathing. Also just to chill myself out, but, yeah.
Yeah, well, it will do that.
Yeah.
And then the second question is, where can people find you if they want to work with you and We'll also attach it all to the show notes.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at dr.emilykadish.dpt and most active on there. And then I have a website, empowerherpt.com, that you can both reach out to me on either of those, and I'm very responsive. And then that's it.
Great. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you, Emily. This was awesome.
Thank you guys for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast. Join in every week as we release new episodes.
Subscribe or leave us a rating at Apple Podcasts. If you have questions or topics to cover, please email moveyourbb@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @moveyourbb.